And Smashville, good morning and thank you for joining us. It is Morning Drive. Hour number two is off and running here on this Monday, ESPN 102.5. The game, Nikhale Braden-Gall, Derek Mason, and Chase McCabe. 615-737-1025 is the number. The first half hour of the show, we did a lot on the NFC and AFC championship games.
There's a Super Bowl, folks.
Yeah, how about that? Rams-Patriots. So do we get
18 years to the day, I think, the Super Bowl is going to happen.
And that's
to the matchup prior, to the Ty Law,
yeah.
Tom Brady. That's where everybody can thank the Rams and Dick Vermeil. Was it Dick Vermeil or was it Mike?
Dick Vermeil.
Dick Vermeil?
No, he didn't lose.
Oh, no, yeah, it was Mike Martz. Right? Yeah, you're right.
We can all thank Kurt Warner and Mike Martz for giving us Tom Brady.
So for the next
Thanks
2 weeks,
lot.
Do we get a bunch of like former Rams going on shows saying,
"Oh yeah,
we were robbed 17 years ago, Spygate"?
Nah,
yes,
yeah, but no.
Marshall Faulk's in the media, Kurt Warner's in the media.
Y'all had a chance to win that game. Y'all were the highest scoring offense in the National Football League that year, and y'all got reduced to what, like 20 points somewhere around
there? Than that. Yeah, because
it's
the
like
Patriots
17.
Were watching their practice.
Yeah, it's their
obviously,
fault.
Obviously, Derek.
They should have considered it a little bit better.
And Brady's balls were deflated.
Yeah. you can't play with deflated balls, man.
I mean.
You just can't do it.
Well, he had 203 left last night when he got the ball back, and they were properly inflated.
Yeah, and when he got the ball back, I'm like,
I never
2 minutes left?
Yeah.
Like, wow, that's a little bit too long. And again,
and it wasn't even enough time for them to win.
No.
Exactly.
You can't give Patty Mahomes 32 seconds.
No. He showed with 32 seconds, I can get the ball down the field.
Mm-hmm. Very impressed with that kid, man. He played a whale of a fourth quarter last night. You got to give him a lot of credit.
That might have won him the MVP that game.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and if you're going to go with – and if your argument was Drew Brees, like mine was,
yeah,
your arm gets hit, the ball flails, and some guy laying on his back makes an interception to win the game. I mean, it is what it is.
All right, so here's what we got coming up this hour. Alan Bell, 24/7 Sports, will join us at the bottom of the hour. We'll get back to those games as well. Preds today, 2 o'clock puck drop in Colorado. Then later this week they have Vegas. We wrapped up the last half of the first hour talking about the Preds. Let's get some phone calls in on the Preds, 615-737-1025. I want to hear from Predator fans this morning the way this team has been trending. And we started off with Justin in Greenbrier, who's up next on Morning Drive. What's up, Justin?
What's up, guys? Y'all doing all right this morning?
Doing good, bud.
Man, I don't know what to say. I mean, you could get some new blood in there, and maybe it will be an eye-opener for these guys that are going to be on the team. But, I mean, last year we had one of the best defenses as far as, we're ranked one of the best defenses, but I haven't really seen much. And I think what Florida and all these other lower teams are doing is playing back against the Preds. And the Preds are, I don't know if they're being a little too aggressive, but maybe they should get back to playing some simple hockey, especially on the power play, because nobody fears the Preds when it comes to their power play. That's probably why they sometimes take penalties so they could, because they know they're not going to score. So that could be a problem there. I just think they need to get back to playing simple hockey, and maybe that could turn the tide and then get some confidence on that power play. So I just want to hang up and listen after that.
I think the thing you nailed there is just confidence, because today it's Colorado. Mm-hmm. Wednesday at 9 o'clock they go to Vegas, and then you have the layoff for the All-Star break. You need to build some confidence going into that break so that when you come out, you feel good about yourself. You didn't do what you should have done at home, and that's get at least 4 of 6 points. Mm-hmm. Now you got two pretty solid teams that you could foreseeably see in the playoffs.
Yeah, it easily could be a first-round matchup, Colorado and Nashville, and wouldn't even be surprised if you had to travel to Colorado for games 1 and 2, frankly, the way they're playing. I think they're going to be better. I think Justin touches on something, though, about this Preds team, is even if you do make a pretty large swing, you're not changing the complexion of the team, right? Like, you're not – does anybody in the room expect them to trade Ryan Johansson or P.K. Subban? That's not happening. So even if you do trade Fiala, which in our opinions would be a pretty big move, a very talented young commodity on your team, he scored 23 times last year at a very young age, a top 6 forward with a lot of potential, that's a pretty big change. The first 12 or 13 or 14 most important players are still all there. It's going to be on them to fix this. It's on Lavi and the players to fix this. It's not – David Poile can make an adjustment and bring in a, as you said last week, Derek, a dog to stand in the middle of the crease on the second line. They can do that. But this is on that locker room. This is on the room. They're the room that's together now for a reason. They've been together now for 3 years, essentially. Maybe you can make it four, but really three with PK and some of the other guys. And it's on you guys. You got to fix it yourself. This isn't going to be solved by some magic, you know, formula that David Poyle is going to send down the pipe into the locker room.
I think you see this with teams. I think that have a run of really good seasons, and they've been together, you know, 3-4 years. I think you see some complacency there, and unless you have that one guy, that alpha in the room, and I mean, I equate a lot of things to football, because I think they're both the same. I think they're the ultimate, you know, two of the ultimate team sports, and you know, more so hockey, because you know, you got to play on a defensive end and on an offensive end, so you got to be together as a team. But I look at, you know, I look at New England and I look at who's the alpha in that room. Well, it's Tom Brady, so he doesn't allow for any complacency.
Nope.
So who's the alpha in the room for the Nashville Predators? I mean, I've been on teams where the alpha in the room was Steve McNair. Don't allow for complacency. The alpha in the room is Ray Lewis or Ed Reed. Somebody, the guys that are, they don't allow for complacency.
You know who the alpha is?
Who?
I think it's Peter Laviolette.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it can't be the head coach.
I know that.
It can't be the
there
head
has
coach.
To be a self,
yeah, it has
factor.
To be someone within that locker room where
Chaser,
where he gets them. They don't care about being liked. You know, yeah, I want you respect me and I want to be amongst the guys, but I need to be the person that tells you, if you're not doing your job, then you need to get on your damn job.
Now,
we need to get it going. There needs to be an alpha in the room.
This is sort of similar to the Titans to some degree,
yeah,
where the most important player, Mariota or Pekka, for example, sort of do a little bit more leading by example.
Mm-hmm.
They're not extraordinarily vocal. Now, you can chime in here, Chase, on this. I mean, Ekholm is the father of the defenseman and the European players. Ellis is on the leadership committee. Subban's the most outspoken, vocal guy on the team. There's plenty of other names there. Johansson's a little bit more laid back. Like,
tell me,
he's
why
not...
did they bring Fisher back last year?
I mean, part of it was leadership. No,
he was the alpha. Mm-hmm. He was the alpha in the room.
But he wasn't allowed. He's not a loud guy, though.
No, but he's an alpha.
But he's that alpha in the room that he doesn't allow for complacency.
When he speaks, you shut up.
Give me the three in order of your opinion, whether it's demonstrative behavior or you shut up and listen and he gets his point across. Give me the three in order, 1, 2, and 3, in that locker room, not the coaching staff.
I would say I'd put Ryan Ellis number one, probably. I would Roman Josi two, maybe more by default, just because of the letter on his sweater.
But also very Mariota.
He will speak when he needs to, and then probably Johansson.
Okay.
I'd go those three.
And I don't. There's not a hellfire and brimstone guy in that
no.
list. There's
no,
not a
there's
guy.
Not.
That, you talk about Ray Lewis. Like the attitude that guy brings to a room, like, you know, mm-hmm. like sometimes you need a screaming, and this is what makes Olave good at his job is, and like there's times where you need to go to the whip, and there's times where you need to sort of coddle, right? And that's the job of a great coach. Well, the job of Ray Lewis isn't to coddle people,
no.
right? The job for Ray Lewis is to get you, you know, so fired up for greatness that you don't know how to, you're coming out of your shoes, in this case, your skates, I guess. So I there's not one of those guys in that room. A lot of leaders, a lot of great leaders, a lot of great players, but there's not a Ray Lewis type of player.
615-737-1025. Let's go to Kevin in Mount Juliet, wants to talk Preds. Kevin, you're up on Morning Drive. Go ahead, bud.
Yeah, my question was with the starts that they have. You know, Lobby always talks about the leadership group, and you guys were just discussing that as well, but you can't have that same start where, oh, we didn't play for the first 20 minutes. And that seems to be like the excuse that they've been using a lot lately. Now you got to come out of the locker room ready to play. And that's my biggest concern with the leadership group, that you just can't have those slow starts, and that's become a pattern.
Well, are slow starts nice, when you continually fall behind? Because in football, we always say, well, the coach didn't have them ready to play. They got off the bus. They weren't prepared. Is that a coaching thing, or is that a leadership player thing?
Yes.
Or both.
It's tricky because – I think the coach does everything during the week to get you to prepare you to go out and play a game. And, you know, when a long, grueling season, you know, that coach speak, it tends to fall on deaf ears sometimes because people get so used to it. I think it's up to the players. I think it's up to the players to police that. I think it's up to the players to make sure that they don't come, you know, and start off slow. Because Lavi can say whatever he want to say. He can moan. He can yell, scream, throw stuff, kick chalkboards, whatever he wants to do.
Dry erase boards. But
if those guys don't want to go out, just like, you know, you can lead the water, you can lead the horse to a water, but you can't make him drink. That's the same thing with hockey, sports in general. Like, I can give you the tools. I can give you the knowledge that I have. I can give you the inspirational words. But if you don't want to go out there.
You make millions of dollars to play
exactly,
sport.
You don't want to go out there and bust your tail. Then there's, as a head coach, there's nothing I can do. I mean, I've always said a coach's job, whether it be a head coach or a position coach, is to put his players in the best position to succeed. Has Lavi done that? Has the coaching staff done that? Yeah, now it's up to you, player, to take care of the rest.
And let's be clear. This, again, sky isn't falling. They have 60 points. They're second in the division. They still have the seventh or eighth best point total in the NHL. So this is not a bad hockey team. They're just in a bad stretch. But here's another thought, spinning off what you're saying and what the caller said about early starts. Wasn't the conversation about Peter Laviolette after the Winnipeg game that they played a great first period? And that they didn't play very well in the second and third? Wasn't that the conversation about that game? I mean, that how scary is that? They actually did get off to a good start. They actually did like the way they played in the first period. And then lost 5-1?
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't give you all the good feels.
Nope.
When you talk about you actually did do something we're trying to address, and it still wasn't good enough.
All right, coming up next is a revamp inevitable. Morning Drive rolls on here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. All right, welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll talk Championship Sunday with Alan Bell, managing editor for 247sports.com, coming up in just about 15 minutes. But yesterday,
is there an offensive coordinator, by the way, in this town yet?
No, it's overrated, remember? Oh, okay. Jeremy Pruitt spoke for the whole state.
Yeah, I have it on good authority. Mike Vrabel called Jeremy Pruitt, got some advice on what to do, and he said, you know, just wait like 2 months.
Their careers, albeit very, very short as far as coaching goes, man, they're eerily similar. Mm-hmm. It's scary how similar they are.
I think Pruitt's
One of them had a good football team this past year.
I think it really resonated. High school coaches around the state, college guys, pro guys, OCs are overrated.
Oh, and I tweeted this out yesterday. If you thought we're going to hire somebody because they just looked at Sean McVay one time, if you thought that was out of control – he's in the Super Bowl now, folks. Mm-hmm. Like, he hadn't won a stinking thing, and everyone was hiring everybody associated with him. And now, it's going to be unbearable.
Oh, yeah.
Like, all the jokes we've been making about, like, oh, I went to the bathroom next to Sean McVay, or I brushed elbows with him in the airport one time, therefore I'm qualified to be a head coach in the NFL.
I start following him on Instagram, so now.
He blocked me. He blocked me on Twitter, so I'm qualified. Like, you think it was unbearable before. He's in the Super Bowl now, folks. There's proof of concept now.
Oh, it's only going to ratchet up over the next 2 weeks. Let's get to one element from both games yesterday. We can certainly get to the officiating, how you fix it, so forth and so on. But is it time to revamp overtime? Because one of the main things that Golic and Wingo were talking about this morning was it's inconceivable that Patrick Mahomes doesn't touch the ball in overtime. And I'm conflicted. Mm-hmm. I've always thought college overtime is better. And I feel like I would love to see both people get a shot. But then there's the other part of me with overtime on the professional ranks that says, you know what? If you're mad you didn't get a chance, well, then don't give up a stinking touchdown.
Well, if you hold them to a field goal, you get a chance.
Correct.
Yeah. So the principles of the overtime that college uses applies to the NFL. But if they score a touchdown, it is over with. But if they kick a field goal, then, yeah, you get an opportunity to go down the field and score. I think that's fine. But, I mean, I'm kind of torn, too, because back, you know, 15, 20 years ago, I think this the new rule is wonderful because they allow teams to play defense. Now, because it's so much easier to score, then maybe they should employ the college rule. Like, no matter what you – if it's a touchdown or a field goal, the other team gets an opportunity because they may – these rules so the points can be scored. And you can't tell me that that offense, Tom Brady's offense, fit 20 years ago, it would have been much difficult for them to score because the defense would have been, they would have allowed them to play a little bit more defense than what they play now. So now that it's so easy to score, it's easier to score. I think both teams should get an opportunity.
But listen, you guys know me. I'm a capitalist. The world isn't fair. You know, life ain't fair. The world is mean, blah, 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 blah. I agree with all that stuff. But it's the reason, like, defense is only half of your team. Mm-hmm. And it puts entirely too much weight on a coin toss. That's what I don't like about it.
Mm-hmm.
It puts so much weight onto just a guy flipping a coin. Just some random dude, doesn't play on the field, stands at the midfield, and he just flips a coin. And all of a sudden, your defense has to stop Tom Brady, and that's why you're still going to get a chance to win? You're an offensive team, and your best part of your team doesn't get a chance to score? Listen, in the regular season, you're telling me fantasy players wouldn't want to see the college-style overtime?
Mm-hmm.
You're telling me there wouldn't be money to be made as far as gamblers, the college-style overtime? Now, you can't put it at the 25.
No.
Because kickers are too good. You got to do it the 40.
Yeah.
You got to say 40, meaning you've got to gain some positive yards to put yourself in field goal range to even kick a field goal, or you got to go 40 yards to get a touchdown. So you can't do 25-yard line.
You can get away with a 25 in college because that's still a 42-yarder, and college kickers stink.
College kickers suck, yeah. I just think it's time we I understand the premise of if you want to win, get a stop. I get that. But if you're built on offense, like the Chiefs are, you know, your best part of the team didn't even get a chance to step on the field. Is that real football? And it's not real football. To me, again, it's just putting too much weight on a coin toss.
Let me ask you this, because maybe this is a conspiracy. Maybe this is next level thinking. Maybe I'm just an idiot. I don't know. I'm just going to flush it out, see what you guys think.
Mm-hmm.
So in the regular season, overtime is 10 minutes. It's not 15 minutes. I believe in the playoffs, it is 15 minutes. I'm almost certain I saw the clock at 15 minutes
last
night.
It doesn't matter. You can put up 100 minutes on the clock, right? I mean, they're going to go until somebody wins.
Do you think they don't alter the format to more college because they do not want these guys on the field longer than they have to be because of player safety, concussions, lawsuits,
all of that?
They don't
care about player safety, man. Seriously?
No, they don't, because they don't want to deal with the after effects.
It's the PR view of it, because I'm with Derek. They don't actually care.
Because
they're trying to go to 18 games.
Exactly.
Really?
But they don't want to put themselves at risk.
Well, but here's the question, though. I'd like to know, because college overtimes, other than the LSU A&M game this year, which is a complete anomaly, you have to go for two after the second overtime, which means you're really not going much more than two or three overtimes at most. And how many plays do you really run when you get the ball on the 40-yard line? I mean, how many extra plays is it? Like, if they would have given New England the ball on the 40 there, they would have scored in, what, four plays, five plays? And then Kansas City gets the ball, they run maybe four or five plays. It's either a turnover on downs or it's a touchdown and the game's over, or they tie it and they go to – I mean, we're talking about five, maybe four plays, five plays per possession. We're talking about an extra 10 plays.
Yeah.
Out of 160 or 70, you can't play 10 more plays? Come on.
What bothers you more? The guy who complains about the officiating that cost them a game, or the guy that says, we need to redo overtime because we didn't get a chance? Because both of them are out this morning, right?
Officiating.
Yeah,
guy.
I mean, neither. If you're just talking about this weekend, then I think they have a valid point. That the
officiating guy.
Yeah, officiating. There was a play in the game that lost the game for the Saints.
Well, and also in the Chiefs-Patriots, we didn't even talk about this yet. How about the Edelman thing with the punt return, whether or not it touched his hand?
That's the closest
thing I've ever seen.
But it wasn't – I don't think it was – because I think he touched it, but then there are some that say he didn't, but then there are some that say he did. But
that took
about 15 to 20 minutes. And if you're taking 15 to 20 minutes, that tells me you're not quite sure about what happened. So if you're not quite sure about what happened – the rules state there has to be conclusive evidence for you to overturn the call. And it wasn't.
Jim Nantz nailed it. Jim Nantz was like, this is going to be really critical. What's the call in the field going to be? Because it's going to be hard to overturn.
Exactly.
He nailed it before they actually made the call in the field. And then they go, it's been ruled that the receiver touched it, and it's Chiefs' ball at the spot of the recovery. So I'm going, oh, there's no way they can overturn it. And then they showed the replay 4,000 times, and I'm going, you don't need 4,000 replays. Once you get to the third replay and you can't decide –
then to play on the field stands.
By definition, you've reached the point where you can't decide. Like,
and I know they end up getting the ball back still, but it's just certain things. I can understand the person that comes out and said, well, the, you know, format needs to change for overtime, and refs were bad. Well, for this in this week, just this week in particular, you have somewhat of a valid point. There was a call that was missed, a blatant call. I mean, blatant call. And then the overtime, I mean, you didn't give the team that was arguably the second best. No, they were the best offense in the National Football League, or they might have been second to the Rams.
One of the best ever.
Yeah. You didn't give them an opportunity to touch the football.
Let me ask you guys this. If the Chiefs had won the toss and the Chiefs got the football in overtime and the Chiefs went down the field and scored, would overtime guy be out in full force today?
No, because Brady's done.
I think overtime guy, whoever loves the New England Patriot, overtime guy would have came out. So overtime guy would have came out regardless, but there would have probably been more overtime. But there would have been less overtime guy.
I think 80% of America was rooting for the Chiefs.
But I'm saying they still would have been out. You still would have heard overtime person.
Oh, we'd be celebrating it. Yeah. Oh, great system. Wonderful system. I love that Tom Brady never touched a football.
For me, it wasn't.
Great rule.
It wasn't a hatred for Tom Brady. I respect the hustle. I appreciate what Andy Reid has done. So I was rooting for Andy Reid. And then, which hadn't been a big story, the whole Edelman thing and him getting popped for PEDs. You cheated, dude. You cheated. Okay? I have no respect for you now. You cheated.
Wow.
I have none whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And that's for anybody that's got popped for PEDs. You cheated. None whatsoever.
And you know what's crazy? Two of the most important pieces in two of the two offenses yesterday didn't even come up on the broadcast one time.
Nope.
Mark Ingram, Julian Edelman, both guys that got busted for
cheating.
Both
of them.
And not one time was it mentioned. Now, I'm not saying they should have mentioned it. I'm not. Mm-hmm. Listen, I'm the guy who says we don't care. Fans don't care. Media doesn't care. We understand that football is a gladiator sport, and these guys put their bodies through, you know, World War III every game. And so there's a level of respect I think people have for that. And they go, oh, you know what? He took some HGH. Who cares? And people don't care.
Well, just make it legal.
It wasn't
even
mentioned, though. They didn't even mention it one time yesterday on either game that two of the most important players on those offenses were busted this year for cheating.
Did you guys notice late in the game, Belichick threw the smart tablet? Slammed it on the ground, threw it out the back of the bench.
It was because of the pick play.
Dude, there's a huge marketing opportunity for like a case, right? Like if you're like, I don't know, Otter or whatever. If you make a case for your iPad that protects it,
well, they do.
I'm putting that thing around the Belichick pad and just saying, go ahead and slam it all or Saban. Hey,
he still would have broken it.
And get it right. It's the Microsoft Surface. That's what the NFL uses. So
that's how the rest of America is when they're at home and they're on their iPad and their Wi-Fi crashes. They just want to throw the stinking thing. That's how Belichick was last night.
Yeah, I don't care what kind of case.
It was a little bit of a pick play.
I mean, all teams do it. It is what it is.
I'm not going to lie. It didn't matter to the outcome of the game, but as I'm watching Sammy Watkins run, I'm like, how did you fall down, dude? Because that's Sammy Watkins. Like that guy, I've never seen that guy tackled in open space like that.
All right, coming up next, we'll get some perspective from Alan Bell, managing editor for 24/7 Sports. We'll talk to him about Conference Championship Sunday. That's next here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. But first, let me tell you about my friends at Woodhouse Day Spa in Midtown Nashville. Right now, you can't go wrong with a gift card from America's favorite day spa, guys. We're closing in on Valentine's Day, so if you've got a gorgeous wife, a beautiful girlfriend, take care of her and give her the gift of relaxation and pure indulgence at the Woodhouse Day Spa in Midtown Nashville. Right now, the number one option, everybody's talking about it, it is the Woodhouse Private Couples Retreat. It includes a couples massage, a private VIP room, champagne, chocolate, mimosas, you name it, they got it. The Woodhouse Day Spa in Midtown Nashville, America's luxury spa with nearly 70 locations nationwide. Check them out today at nashville.woodhouse. Monday morning. It is Morning Drive rolling on, reacting to Conference Championship Sunday from the National Football League. The Super Bowl is set. We'll break that down ad nauseum for the next, 13 days or whatever. God knows it'll be way too long. But in the meantime, let's react to yesterday as we welcome in Alan Bell, managing editor for 247sports.com's coverage of the NFL. Alan, good morning. What's going on, man?
Hey, what's up, guys? I appreciate you having me.
Good to have you. And so let's start with the first game yesterday, and obviously the controversial finish and the no call, which could have been pass interference, you know, hitting a helpless receiver, so forth and so on. And a lot of people are saying now that the league and Roger Goodell could step in. We know that probably would never happen, but what do you make of that? Would Goodell ever do it? What would be the repercussions and kind of the trickle-down effect if Goodell ever did step in and say, that was such an egregious error, we got to correct it?
Yeah, you know, there's so many things, so many, you know, layers of the onion to peel back there. So first off, I mean, I think the NFL is going to make a statement today. They almost made one last night, but they didn't want to interrupt the AFC Championship game. So I think they're going to make a statement, a formal one today, saying, you know, obviously the referees blew the call. It should have been pass interference or even more. However, this, the point that I get to is, you know, players are held accountable for everything in the NFL. They're held accountable. Cameras are jammed in their face 4 minutes after a game. Why aren't referees held accountable, right? Like, I don't understand why, you know, they're just given such a huge leeway of, oh, hey, you know, something went wrong. It's okay. You know, we're not going to put a camera on their face. We didn't even see them after the game, not even the lead official. They're just given a, you know, media's just given a pool report afterward. Think about how big of a non-call that was. That changed legacies yesterday. Drew Brees, Sean Payton, I mean, it completely changed everything. Now, the hard part is this, is it goes to show that in the playoffs, in the NFL, you know, everything is razor thin. Your margin of error is always thin, especially in a conference championship weekend. It's tough. One mistake or one, you know, just bad call, bad play can really, you know, ruin everything and cost you the game. It's just tough, man. If I were a Saints fan, I would wake up this morning probably feeling a little sick.
Are you personally, and do you think people will be excited about a Rams-Patriots Super Bowl?
You know, a little bit. I mean, it's the Super Bowl. Obviously, it's going to get love. There's a lot of stars on both teams. But, you know, Saints-Patriots probably would have done a little bit more. Maybe Saints, Chiefs. The Rams just aren't that big of a name yet. And it's weird to think, you know, with them being in Los Angeles, such a large media market, that, you know, they're not bigger than they are. But you look at the team, I mean, Sean McVay, excuse me, is pretty quiet of a guy. He doesn't really say too terribly much. Jared Goff says less. They're not even playing Todd Gurley, their star running back. So, you know, it's not necessarily the most dynamic, you know, matchup and teams going into a media week. However, I think it's going to be a heck of a game, and especially if what we saw the Patriots going on the road to arguably the best team in the NFL and the Chiefs, shutting them down, and then the Patriots go to the Super Bowl and they're immediately underdogs again, and the Rams are favored by one, it shows you how good of a team that is. So I think as we get closer, fans are going to realize it's going to be a pretty good game.
Alan Bell joining us. We'll get back to the AFC game in a moment, but let me just stay with what Braden said with the Super Bowl. I think the most interesting layer or the most interesting component to this game coming up in 13 days, I will go on record and say this is the most cerebral Super Bowl ever between head coaches, with 32-year-old Sean McVay, supposedly the greatest offensive innovator the history of the game has ever seen. Anybody that knows him gets a job, against Belichick, who held Patrick Mahomes and that Chiefs offense to 32 yards in the first half. I think the number one selling point for me is brainchild, boy wonder, Sean McVay against the greatest mind the sport has ever seen in Bill Belichick.
Yeah, I mean, you just nailed it right there. I mean, you've got, you know, the greatest coach of all time who's going to what? This is the Patriots' ninth Super Bowl under him, and he won two as a DC of the New York Giants. I mean, this guy is the NFL going against the coach that essentially the NFL just hired every single coach that's ever had his phone number, right? Like, the entire league is trying to find the next Sean McVay, and Bill Belichick saying, well, I mean, that's great. You could go find him, but we're going to keep going to the Super Bowl and doing our thing. So I think you're exactly right. I mean, that is the storyline of you've got, you know, the future greatness, the boy wonder, the kid genius going against the actual genius who's done this before and trying to cement, you know, the capstone of his legacy. So, yeah, I think you nailed it. That's exactly what it's going to be.
Now, speaking of legacies, obviously since, I think it's 2001, somewhere around there, there's only really been three quarterbacks in the Super Bowl for the AFC. It's either been, take out Joe Flacco, but it's either been Peyton Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, or again, Tom Brady. Moving forward, because I think we thought we were going to run into this problem years and years ago when Elway and Kelly and Montana and Aikman and Warren Moon, guys like that, Kurt Warner, retired. When these guys leave the AFC, Manning has already left. Now the only guy left in the NFL still playing in the AFC is Tom Brady. Is the AFC still the top conference once Tom Brady leaves? Because for the last, you know, at least 10 years, it's really been Roethlisberger or Brady or Manning that have been winning Super Bowls for the AFC.
Man, you're exactly right. And that's a great question because, yeah, I mean, you go through, you know, since 2002, you go through it. I mean, it's been the same teams that go to the Super Bowl: Steelers, Patriots, Broncos, Colts, right? I mean, the AFC has been that the entire time. I mean, look back at this year. The NFC throughout the entire season was way more dominant, I would say, in terms of having more dynamic teams than the AFC, right? Like, we looked at it and said, man, the AFC race, we kind of know the 6 to 7 teams. We just don't know the order. But you look at the NFC, and you got teams like the Minnesota Vikings, right, that were a pretty good team all season. They didn't even make the playoffs. So it's tough, man. That's a great question. And then also take into account how long, you know, is Brady, is Ben Roethlisberger, how long are they going to be in the league for? You know, I know Brady says he wants to play till he's 45, and I know Roethlisberger's going to come back next year. But, yeah, when these guys go, it's going to switch pretty quick. Now, the good thing for the AFC is that you've got Patrick Mahomes, you've got Baker Mayfield. Like, you've got some guys that are ready to step up. You've got a Sam Darnold, right? Like, you've got some young quarterbacks coming up, and that's not even mentioning the guys that are kind of mid-tier starters in terms of their age. So that's a great question. And, you know, it almost seems like it's going to switch each year between NFC and AFC. But who knows, man? It's hard to predict that. It's hard to see where it's going to go. But, yeah, I mean, as long as Brady and as long as Roethlisberger are still playing, those guys are going to be in the hunt, you know, at least going, you know, to continue on their dominance that they've had.
Alan, final question for you. We're going to get into Tony Romo in the next segment probably. So I want to ask you this question because everybody loves Tony Romo on these broadcasts on CBS. And look, CBS nailed it. I mean, they found the next great thing, and he's phenomenal. But when you talk about, and everybody was abuzz with the way Romo is basically predicting and telling you what's going to happen seconds before it does. So in your opinion, is Tony Romo a genius, or is Tony Romo just outworking other analysts in his preparation to know what's coming?
All right. So I think Tony Romo's coming at it from a different angle than most other analysts are. Obviously, he played quarterback. He understands the game on both sides. The guy is phenomenal, you know, at what he does. I even saw people saying that, you know, that he should be some sort of, like, defensive coordinator in the NFL the way, you know, he's predicting plays. I mean, the guy's just good. I think it's just a combination. He probably is working. He knows the film to study. He knows how to study, which, you know, Mason, like, you could tell, you know, anybody in the world, like, once you understand how to properly study film and how to go about it, you're going to see things that really no one else is going to, right? So he could tell Jim Nance all day long, like, hey, look for this, look for this, look for this. But until it's inherent, until it's in you, and you've done it for year after year after year, it's just hard to pick that up. So Romo's just, he just has, you know, a step up that really nobody else has. But he's good, man. CBS did know, because not only, you know, can he predict and see things that's going on that most people can't, he's fun too. Like, his energy brings it. So yeah, man, CBS just absolutely nailed it with him, and he's going to continue doing that for a long, long time.
Alan, good stuff. We appreciate the time. Thank you very much.
Man, I appreciate you guys. Take care. Have a good day.
You got it. Alan Bell, managing editor for 247sports.com's NFL coverage. And by the way, CBS will have the Super Bowl, so we're going to get Romo.
Yeah,
in 13 days.
But here's the unique thing about Romo. And this is why he comes off, and I'm not saying he's outworking anyone on the broadcasting team, because these guys, you know, it's a tough job, and you got to know your stuff if you're going to do it week in and week out. But here's the advantage he has over some of the other quarterbacks, even over Troy Aikman, and I think Troy Aikman's great at that, is that he just retired. And he retired at a point where the NFL is changing. So he understands the old, but he understands the new, too. If Aikman, I mean, if Romo gets in the booth 10 years ago, it's a little bit different because the game changed in 10 years. But he got into it at the right time because now he understands these new offenses that they're running. This is stuff he was learning in Dallas. So he can call out a play. He can see a defense. He can see these new defenses because this is what he had to break down every week. Mm-hmm. So he does a wonderful job. It's not, again, it's not outworking people. He's just,
yeah,
it's how, when he came into it and the game is switching,
he's also,
so to speak.
Y'all just give him credit. He's a smart dude.
Oh, yeah.
I
mean,
I find this Romo discussion to be fascinating, though, because I think you can make the case for both sides of it. And frankly, when it comes to broadcasters, everybody's opinion is sort of correct, right? Like, you have your own personal level of enjoyment for a broadcaster, and there's nothing right or wrong about your own opinion. This is one of those where, like, we're all, everybody's got a you-know-what, and just, like, opinions, and you're allowed to have that about a broadcaster.
All right, let's get people's thoughts on this. Tony Romo, 615-737-1025. Is he brilliant? Does he just outwork the other analysts? Is he this in the perfect situation, having just retired and knowing where the game is going? 615-737-1025. We'll talk about that on the other side here on Morning Drive on ESPN 1025 The Game. All right, boys, Tony Romo, let's get right into it. Morning Drive, ESPN 1025 The Game. We'll come to your calls in just a moment. For me, I can't get enough Romo. I love Collinsworth, but I really, really love Tony Romo.
So I thought the Romo calling the plays things 2 years ago, which was his first year broadcasting, was pretty cute. It was cool, and then it really wore off on me. I didn't like being told what the play was. Like, part of what I love about sports is it's the best reality television show ever created. I don't know what's coming. Part of what I like about Collinsworth is that he gives you what Tony Romo gives you, but he does it sort of in a veiled, more generic, sort of less direct way. Romo's just so overtly like, this is what's coming. And then it happens, you're kind of like, okay, that's a really cool call, but it got a little cute for me. I really liked yesterday, though, because a lot of it was because he'd been in those meeting rooms and because he talked to Brady, and he's like, listen, this is going to be either a quarterback sneak or, oh, here he's killing the play of the line. It's going to lead to a motion, sure enough. Then they motion the fullback. And then they run right off tackle to the right. And he, you know, hey, keep an eye on Gronk. Keep an eye on Gronk if he's going to be single covered. Well, there he is. He's single covered. They're going to go to him. And he throws the slant to Gronk. I liked how he did it yesterday a lot better. Mm-hmm. I don't like his voice for some reason. Now, I'm sure there's lots of people that don't like my voice. But for some reason, his I don't know, it, like goober? I don't know. Like, there's just something weird about his voice that bothers
nasally.
Me.
Nasally.
Maybe you're
years of barking in hostile environments.
Yeah.
Well, when he gets excited, though, he's kind of like, oh, gosh, guys, I just don't know.
But see, that rubs off to me. Like, I get
you
even
like
more.
That.
His giddiness gets me going even more. Like, because I genuinely feel like he is in love with what he does.
I agree with that, and I like it. I don't it manifests itself a way that, like, kind of bothers me a little bit, but, mm-hmm. like, not anything that's bad. Like, he's really good at what he does. I enjoy his work. I'm the nerd here, so I should appreciate the nerd. It's almost a little too nerdy sometimes for me. But by and large, I think yesterday was really enjoyable to watch him because it was not just I'm calling out the plays. It's sort of here's why they're going to do this and keep an eye on this in the future. And then, listen, every time they get in this situation, they're going to run Julian Edelman in man-to-man situations over the middle, and sure enough, that's what they did.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's about how you deliver it. If you just tell people, oh, this is going to be a run left, and then it's a run left. Oh, this is going to be a pass right, and it's a pass right. I think eventually that wears thin. Yesterday, he was just in the Patriots huddle, and I give him a lot of credit. It was very enjoyable yesterday.
I see an opportunity for the networks to make a lot of money, and this is what I would do if I were running things. You have, because they have the availability to do this, you have two feeds, okay? You have one that's your normal play-by-play and color analyst. And then you have the other one that is like the All-22 nerd cast.
I love the All-22.
That's Romo or whoever just nerding it out. And then you have your choice.
Let me just take your idea. Right now, if they said, you know what, here's what we're going to do. We're going to put Sims back in the booth with Nance. You can watch the regular broadcast on CBS or on CBS Sports Network. We're going to dump Tony Romo into a film room, and it's just going to be Tony Romo by himself with a hot microphone just rambling about the game. I would watch that.
I want to see Romo and Baldy in the same room. Breaking it down. Yes.
Well said. 615-737-1025. Let's go to Tracy in Dixon, who's got some thoughts on Tony Romo. What's up, Tracy?
Man, guys, I would have waited on this phone for 5 hours since you brought up that Romo, dude.
Oh, I'm boy, you're anti-Romo,
man,
aren't you?
I sat right here in this Kroger parking lot. I'm not leaving. I need to say my piece.
Go ahead.
I'm telling you, I'm a diehard Pages fan, born there, raised there. This guy is crazy. He needs to be a Kansas City Chiefs commentator only or a Dallas Cowboy because that's all he picked. He picked it through the whole game. He talked about it through the whole game. Even my wife sits up and goes, hey, is that an old KC coach that's talking or an old football player? I'm like, why? What do you think? He says, boy, everything he says, if the Chiefs, if Brady throws this in a little screen, oh, the Chiefs are going to get it on 4th and 9. If he throws this, the Chiefs are going to get it on this. Just kept hammering the Patriots. Didn't talk nothing about them when the Chiefs were on offense. Didn't talk nothing about the Patriots' defense or what the Chiefs are going to run. But all knew about the Patriots. Everybody dissects the Patriots, but they hate them. So Romo needs you to stay with Kansas City, hang out there, run with them next year, or go to Dallas and run them because he's definitely not the coach for Indianapolis that's the commentator now. You know,
Tony Dungy.
He's awesome. He may pick his team because he's coached them, but he never, ever continues to slam and alter. It irks me to death.
All right. Hang on a second here. Because I got a couple of tweets yesterday saying how big of a homer that the broadcast was towards the Patriots. Yeah.
It's amazing people hear what they hear.
I don't understand the he was an anti-Patriots guy. All I hear from people complaining is, oh, my God, these guys are so obsessed in New England and Tom Brady, and they just love Belichick, and they're just slobbering all over New England. And I have to defend, I think Romo goes down the middle.
Yeah.
I thought he played it down the middle. So, Tracy, I'm glad you sat in the car in the parking lot to tell us what you just told us, but I think the majority of people see it the other way. And
well,
the other
most people
see it as like, oh, he's a Patriots homer.
That Joe Buck. Mm-hmm. Everybody thinks Joe Buck hates their team. Like, that's been a common theme for a decade. Joe Buck hates Philadelphia. Joe Buck hates Los Angeles. Like, Joe Buck hates everybody you root for. And, like, Joe Buck has kind of ran with that little bit.
No, here's the deal.
Not even true.
Here's the deal. I hate everybody's team, okay? Just blame me. I hate all your teams. That's fine. I think what Joe Buck hates is lack of drama. Because the more drama there is, the better ratings are, and the better ratings are, the better his paycheck is. So listen, we are all of the belief of, you know, I love the team that pays my mortgage. Like, that's the team that I like. And drama is what pays these guys salaries, is great games. So playing up the hype is what your job is supposed to be as a broadcaster, is to make the moment feel bigger than it maybe even really is. So these guys should, in theory, be playing up both sides, every quarterback, every big play, every third down. Every coach is amazing, right? Like, this is why everybody hated John Gruden.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's just everybody's amazing. Everybody's great. Yeah. So I don't really have I didn't really find that with Romo yesterday.
No. If you want to say he's too over-the-top excited, I'll give you that. 615-737-1025. Daniel in Nashville next on Morning Drive. What's up, Daniel?
Hey, how's it going, gentlemen?
Good.
Go ahead, Daniel.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Hey, so not even joking. I'm pretty sure you took the words right out of my mouth from your producer. I called in specifically to say I want a nerd feed with Tony Romo, Brian Baldinger, and maybe Dan Orlovsky. That is one of a few things where I'm just like, shut up and take my money. The other one is NHL, fully mic'd up, uncensored, to get all the chirps. I would pay so much money for both of those products. I think Tony Romo is great. As someone who didn't grow up playing football but has watched a lot of film because I'm really interested in it, I've learned so much from watching the game like that. I've learned to pick out different things to watch on different plays, and it's made the watching experience so much better for me. But then again, I think I'm in the minority, but I would pay money to see that, and I don't think I'm the only one. And I think Tony Romo yesterday, I think you guys were spot on. I think he was straight down the middle. As someone who just moved back down here from Patriots country, I didn't find him to be slobbering on Belichick and Brady any more than anyone else. I found it to be really objective and, as always, spot on football-wise. But yeah, put Orlovsky, Romo, and Baldy in a booth and give me the all 22, and I'll be happy all season.
Thank you, Daniel. I smell an off season show where we just, all right, what would you pay money for on a broadcast? Mm-hmm. Because like that mic'd up thing for the NHL with the chirping, that sounds amazing as well. I think we can do that. No question about that. So we can nerd out on some.
Oh,
some
no question.
Like that.
I would pay good money for Jason Witten just to go away.
No, yeah. I enjoy the all 22 for the national championship game, but Witten, you could have took him out and replaced him with someone else.
You notice that they've put Booger in the booth.
Yeah. Booger is a little bit better. It's a hard job, and I'm pretty sure he's going to get better next year. But this year was just like
– I don't know about that. I think in broadcasting –
You're telling me you're not ever going to get better if you work at it for more than a year.
I think you either – in that type of role, you either have it or you don't.
I think he can get
– To some degree.
I think he can get better, but for them to automatically just throw him on, you know – one of the top lines, I think that was just completely wrong.
They tried to do what CBS did with Romo. Let's grab a cowboy who's handsome, who's got nice hair, and let's put him in front of the camera.
Think he's a cowboy. I think that has a lot to do with it.
He's Mr. America. He's Captain America.
It was to me that all 22. If you put Romo, if you put Baldy and probably someone else in the room watching all 22, and then, you know, having a game like in the left-hand corner somewhere, I think that would be amazing television. Yeah. Now, you might not get to all the plays because they constantly rewinding it, but I mean, I think it would make for great television.
I know we got to hit the break here. My favorite one is the fourth down. That was my favorite one where he's like, "Listen, this is the only thing they do on fourth down. The Patriots, mm-hmm. if they're clogged up the middle, they're not running the sneak. Mm-hmm. They're going to wash everybody out and they're going to run off tackle." And they did it like three times, and I'm going, That's what makes them good. They know exactly what they're going to do, and they execute one of the two most difficult plays, and it makes it hard to defend. And I thought Romo did a great job of explaining that.
All right. Thank you, Baldy.
Thank you.
I love it.
Perfectly timed. All right, when we come back, there are no more undefeateds in college basketball, and dare I say it, Tennessee basketball. Not women's basketball, not college football, but men's college basketball. The Vols number one. We'll have details coming up next.